तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपं गदा मायं ददाति स्वापदन्तिकम्। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
So here, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is explaining to his dearmost friend and devotee, Uddhava, the mystic yoga perfections. People nowadays are very attracted to achieving yoga perfections. For whatever reason it is, you can even drive into town and you see in so many buildings it says, yoga this, yoga that, yoga the other thing. Yoga is all over town. So why are people interested in practicing yoga? They feel that it is required in order to get better facility to enjoy the material body and mind. To have a strong body nowadays means you are very desirable. If you want to be a real Aussie, you have to have a big frame. You have to look very trim and sporty. And people equate that with perfection, with happiness, and with enjoyment. So they become attracted to the yogic practice. And in other cultures, people are interested in yoga because they know that yoga means control of the mind, control of the senses, which will enable them to enjoy this world to an even greater extent, to be able to influence others. There's even a book called, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence Others. So, one of the yoga siddhis, as we have heard in the previous verses, is that you can read the minds of others. You can influence others' personality. So, that is very much desirable in the material world. But a devotee or a sage who has conquered his senses, breathing and mind, is self-controlled, absorbed in meditation on Krishna, all the mystic perfections can be achieved simply only by doing one of these activities. So if you simply have conquered the senses, but not for your own sake, but for the sake of meditating on Krishna, then all the other mystic perfections, they will simply be achieved automatically. As it is stated by Jiva Goswami here in his commentary, that one acquires all mystic perfections very easily from the personal body of the Personality of Godhead. You see, in the lives of Srila Prabhupada, he was not performing Ashtanga Yoga, he was not doing any of the mystic types of processes or philosophical speculation. He was simply interested in worshipping and satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But thus Krishna gave him all the perfections, all the yoga siddhis. They were achieved by him. And how you can see that? That simply by his desire to spread Krishna consciousness around the world, so many thousands and tens of thousands of living entities have become attracted and came forward to engage in the process of bhakti yoga. We might ask ourselves, why are we sitting here today? Why are we here in Mahaprabhu Mandir, the lotus feet of Shishi Radha Vallabhan, Shishi Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, and Shishi Goni Thai, and Srila Prabhupada? Because Srila Prabhupada, he had that very strong desire to fulfill the prophecy of Mahaprabhu. To fulfill that prophecy that everywhere people of all races, castes, colors and creeds will chant together, Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari. That they will raise their arms and perform Harinam Sankirtan. That was his desire. And his desire became manifest, as we can see. We have here peoples of all nations, nationalities, backgrounds, and they're worshipping Mahaprabhu by the performance of Sankirtan Yagya. Krishna Varnam Tisha Krishnam Sangopangashtabharsharam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayai Yajantihi Sumedasa. If you want to be intelligent, if you want to be known as Sumedasa, as very intelligent, it's like we ask people always, Are you very smart? Or if you have two or three people, you ask them, who's the smartest amongst you? And then everybody goes like this or like that, and it's always funny. So you always ask people, so are you smart? You know, it's like you give them the book and you say, this is for all the nice people, for all the nice persons. Are you a nice person? And then even though the person was just ready to launch on you, you know, in a tirade of rejection and refusal and objection, but you've just completely taken the wind out of his sails. Are you a nice person? I mean, what are you going to say? No, I'm nasty. I'm a schmuck. So, and usually they say, yeah, I'm nice. I'm a nice person. I think so. Or ask them, how is your karma? How is your karma today? You should try that one. How is your karma today? And it makes people think a little bit. But you'd be surprised. 99%. They stop. They think. They start to smile. And they say, actually, yeah, I'm working on it, you know. I'm working on it. But, you know, I'm trying to be good. But sometimes it comes back at me and it bites me, you know. So, but they're very aware. They're conscious of that fact. What was the point where we got off track? Anybody remembers?
Be intelligent.
To be intelligent, yes, sumedasa. If you want to be known as intelligent, you have to engage in Harinam Sankirtan. If you want to be known as alpamedasa, as lazy and as foolish and ignorant, then you go on with all the activities of the material variety. And you might be very expert in manipulating material energy, but it will still not make you sumedasa. And a person may not be very sophisticated, may be very simple. But if you worship the Lord by the performance of Sankirtan, you'll be known as sumedasa. Just like Kolavecha Sridhar. He was a very, very simple devotee. He was living in Rajpur, in Mayapur, just behind Jagannath Mandir, is his house. How many of you have been there, to that place? It's a very peaceful, very nice area. And his profession was, he would make cups and plates from banana leaves. Now that is not a very sophisticated, you know, job. You don't have to get an engineer's degree. You don't have to go and study for many years. All you need is, you need a knife or a machete, and a few basic skills. And he used to sell that. And from whatever he earned, 50% he would spend on the worship of Mother Ganges. And he would maintain his family. He was a householder. Now he was such an advanced and pure-hearted soul that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had performed his first public Sankirtan, who knows, when was that? The first big public Sankirtan in Navadvip. What was the occasion? The memorable festive occasion. Where did they go? They went to the house of the Chankazi, yes. And they went there in grand procession with a lot of torches. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conquered the heart of the Chankazi by his compassion and his magnanimity. And then after that, he went to Kolavecha Sridhar's house. And what did he do? He was there, and actually every day, even as a small boy, every day he used to go to the house of Kolavecha Sridhar. And he would bargain with him. And he would say, Kolavecha, your cups and your leaf plates, they're no good. I give you half the price. And Kolavecha would say, no, they're very good. No bargaining, fixed price. So the Lord would just grab and steal and run away. Sometimes he would pay a little bit and take it and run away. And Kolavecha was very happy to have that exchange with the Lord. So once he had done his big Harinam Sankirtan procession and he had conquered the Jankazi, what did he do? He didn't have a big rally in town and, you know, put up a big podium and get himself glorified by all the people. No. He went to the house, to the hut, to the straw hut of Kolavecha Sridhar. And he drank water from his pot. Now you have to know, Kolavecha, he was so poor, He had one beat up, broken, rusty, dented iron pot with holes in it. And he would use that pot for everything. That was the one utensil he used when he headed out to the field in the morning. That was the one utensil he used for taking bath, for cooking, for doing everything. That was his only pot he had. So Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, after just, you know, winning the gold medal at the Olympics, he went to the house of Kolavecha Sridhar and drank water from his rusty, beat up, you know, broken iron pot. And when he manifested his Mahaprakash, his form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gave benedictions and blessings and boons to all of his devotees in the house, that was in Srimasangam? It was in the, is it right?
Yeah.
On the throne, there. He manifested that form and he gave every devotee the benediction, the boon he desired. He called Sridhar and said, Kolavecha Sridhar, come here. Any benediction, any boon, anything you want, I'm ready to give it to you. What do you want? And Sridhar said, my dear Lord, wherever you appear, I want to be that person who will be allowed to supply you banana leaf cups and plates. And I want you to come and to bargain with me and to argue with me and to steal from me the banana leaf cups and plates. That is my only desire. I do not have any other desire. Now Sridhar was very poor. He lived in a straw hut. Even that, you know, mandir, that little building which is there now, it's quite, you know, paka, it's quite sturdy. He just had a bamboo hut with a thatched roof, with holes in it. And when it rains, and it does rain in Bengal, it rains heavily, then everything gets wet. So he just lived there happily. So, what do we desire from the Lord? We are also having the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sisi Radha Vallabha, on a daily basis. Well, what do we desire from the Lord? Are we asking for continuous unalloyed devotional service? Yes, please, give me more service. Give me more kitchen service. I want to cook more for Crossways. I want to go out more on Sankirtan. I want to clean more. I want to do more service. Or do we have our own agenda? Do we have our own shopping list? Just like now it is Christmas and New Year's time. And everybody makes their shopping lists, right? You also have a list? What do you want? No? Because you're a devotee. You know that Krishna fulfills all your desires. Krishna is in your heart. He already knows before you know. So what is the use of writing everything down? Krishna already knows. So everybody has their shopping list and they're running wildly throughout town, searching after the idea, the phantasmagoria of happiness. What are they trying to buy? What are they trying to achieve? You see them running around with 14 different types of bags, 6 or 5 on each hand. And still, what is happening? What is conspicuously absent in their faces? Happiness, peace, peace of mind, tranquility. It is absent. And they're roaming town like a wandering bunch of madmen, looking for that happiness, for that peace, for that satisfaction. So when we engage in the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when we engage in preaching and book distribution, we have to ask ourselves, what are we distributing? What are we selling? We're not selling a product. It is not about paper with some ink and some cardboard holding it together. We have to ask ourselves, what are we trying to convey? We have to make meaning, not just money. If you just want to make money, people can see the dollar signs in your eyes. They say, hey, that looks familiar. I've seen many people with that look in their face, you know? The guy with his dog, with his dogs there, you know, collecting for his fake charity. and the other guy doing his art thing, and the other guy playing his guitar, and the other salesman trying to, you know, induce me to buy my 476th pair of shoes, you know. They know that look. But if they see that you have no ulterior motive, you have no personal agenda, you just want to help that person. You just want to extend the feeling of gratitude and happiness of Krishna consciousness to that living entity. Why? Because we have been touched by that gratitude of Srila Prabhupada. That's why we want to extend it to others. Because gratefulness means sharing. Sharing means caring. Okay, when you're new to Krishna consciousness, for a few times it's fun. You go, you steal the maha, you hide behind the kitchen container, and you eat it all by yourself. And then a little bit of guilt, a little bit of indigestion and heartburn comes. You ever try to eat the mangal sweets very fast, you know, because you don't want anybody to see you, and then it gets stuck in your throat? Does anybody have that experience? Yes, of course you do. Because you're devotees and you're eager for the mercy. But in the same way, we have to know, what are we trying to convey to people? We're not selling a product. We're conveying emotions. The people who are roaming out there, they're not looking for product. They're looking for emotions. They're looking for love, for affection. They want to make meaning. They want to love and be loved. They want to be recognized. They want to be appreciated. But that recognition, appreciation and love can only come if we connect ourselves with Krishna. Because Krishna knows what we really need. He knows what we really want. He'll not give us all the wrong things, which we then have to take back to the shop in January. And be surprised that it was, you know, a bargain sale, no return, no exchanges. And we can just chuck it in the bin, you know. No. Krishna gives us whatever we need. And sometimes we may think, oh, you know, this is not for me. This is for somebody else. Just like that king who lost his little pinky, his little finger. And he was very upset. And his minister told him, this is actually a great fortune. And the king got very angry, very upset with him. But then later on, when he could not be sacrificed by the dacoits because his body was incomplete, then he understood that it was for his benefit. So we may think, oh, I'm lacking a bit of this, I'm lacking a bit of that, I'm lacking a bit of the other thing. But actually Krishna has given each and every one of us perfect ability, perfect opportunity, perfect facility for engaging in His service. And if we do not have it, that means we do not need it. Because if we would need it, we would have it, because Krishna would supply it to us. So we have to be very conscious. First we have to be conscious, then we can be Krishna conscious. We have to be very conscious, what are we trying to portray? What are we trying to spread here? Not our own egotistical trip of, you know, selfishness. Because that is already common. That is going on sale. A dime a dozen. Everybody has that. Everybody knows that. But if you actually genuinely care for people, and you have goodwill, you have compassion, you have concern to give, you know what happens when you start caring about the people? What's the first thing that happens when you start listening to people? They start caring about you, and they start listening to you. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? It's just like, when you want to be happy, the more you search for happiness, the more miserable you'll be. The less you actually strive and endeavor for happiness, the more happiness will come. Out of its own accord. So in the same way, when we are facing individuals and we actually listen to them and we actually are interested in them, and we actually deeply care, then all of a sudden they will be interested and they will care what do we have to show and what we want to share with them. So sharing means caring and preaching means caring. So we should study the lives of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and see how much they care. Just like Srila Prabhupada. He gave up his comfortable position in Vrindavan at the lotus feet of Sisi Radha Damodar to go to America. And when he was there, first he had the boat journey, 38 or 39 days, on a cargo ship. I mean, who goes on a cargo ship? Even if you go to Tasmania, you take the airplane, right? There is. Yeah, but most people fly. So, and that's a short little stretch. He was doing a long travel, halfway across the globe, and he took a cargo ferry. Not one of them, you know, Atlantic cruise ships with the nice cabins and the bands playing. But cargo ship means there's a lot of containers and a lot of stuff there. So, and then when he arrived, he didn't have any friends or family or admirers welcoming him. He just stepped off that boat with his 200 sets of Srimad Bhagavatams and 40 rupees and the $20 which he got from the captain because he sold him a set of books. So always have books with you so you can sell them. In this way you'll actually survive. You know, we should make a survival program. We drop you behind enemy lines on a parachute with a trolley of 100 books. And we see how long you survive till you press that red button, you know? That rescue button, you know? Air rescue! Come and get me out of here! We should do something like that. Wouldn't it be fun? We drop you with a parachute and 100 Bhagavad Gitas. And we see how long you survive till you press that red button, you know? Get me out of here. Now Prabhupada, for 1 year, he lived on distributing his books. He put them in so many shops and stores on commission, and he sold them. And very meticulously he wrote down, you know, today 25 cents for postage, 55 cents for groceries, like that. He was very meticulous. He wasn't thinking, oh, now, you know, we're rolling in cash here, we got nice catering and this and that, so let's, you know, let's spread it around a bit, right? Prabhupada knew this is Krishna's energy. This is Krishna's Lakshmi. He was very considerate, very deliberate. Even later on, when there was lakhs and lakhs, Srila Prabhupada was very frugal because he understood that this is Krishna's energy. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use it properly. And then he had a travel agent put him on a bus to go to Butler, Pennsylvania, which is really off the beaten track. It is not a happening place. But Prabhupada went there because his sponsor, Gopal and Sally Agarwal, who sponsored his visa to go to America, they lived there. Now, Srila Prabhupada had a small room in Delhi in Chippewada Street. And one time, when he was in Vrindavan, he went to Mathura to do a preaching program at the house of a Mr. Agarwal. And that person was very happy to receive Srila Prabhupada, the sadhu, and have the program. And in the course of their conversation, he mentioned that he has a son, Gopal, and he went to America to study, and he got trapped there by an American woman. And now he won't come back. So that is very bad. But Prabhupada said, why doesn't he sponsor me to go to America? And that was the entire conversation they had. And a few months later, in his mailbox in Chippewada Street, he found a sponsorship letter by Gopal and Sally Agarwal to sponsor them to come to America. Now, sponsoring doesn't mean that they pay your fare and they take any financial guarantees, you know. It just meant that they invite you like that and they will host you. But their house was very small, so he couldn't stay in their house. You know where he stayed? He stayed at the YMCA. You know what the YMCA is? It's a very cheap youth hostel. Like, you know what backpackers use? You have big dormitories. You know, like these shelters where the old, you know, the down and out, you know, the less fortunate people, where they go to stay overnight. The church has some of these shelters also. So YMCA is a youth hostel. Prabhupada stayed at the YMCA. And he walked 7 blocks every day to go and cook at the home of Gopal and Sally Agarwal. For them and for their family. And they liked it very much. But they didn't have a room for Prabhupada to stay in. So he stayed at the YMCA and walked every day, twice. Now I've heard from some devotees who went there to do a yatra in Butler, Pennsylvania, and they had a Harinam procession from the YMCA to the former house of Gopal and Sally Agarwal, who now live in a better house, you know, in a different suburb. But the devotees went, there was about 70 devotees, and it was raining, and they walked all the 7 blocks, and were doing kirtan. And then they were standing and chanting in front of the house, that apartment complex. It was a very, you know, an apartment building with many little apartments inside. And they were just chanting there, and some devotees went up to the door and knocked, you know. And the other devotees got scared, you know, what if somebody opens? There's 70 people out in the rain chanting and dancing. It's pretty crazy, right? So luckily nobody was there. But Gopal and Sally Agarwal were there also with the devotees. And they shared all the fond memories of Prabhupada's stay with them and his exchanges with their children and what he all did. And afterwards, Sally, she commented that, you know, Gopal is now 7 years old. I have never seen him dance in his entire life. This kirtan, today, this is the first time in his entire life that I have seen him dance. And I have never seen him as happy as today. Huh? So he got Prabhupada's mercy. And Sally did too. Because she was very happy to introduce Prabhupada to all the people of the town. So she made arrangements, she called for meetings, she arranged different outings so Prabhupada could go and speak. So when you go out, when you know that, just now we had this big Carnival Spirituel, and I hear you had a great success, so much favorable reviews, so many wonderful programs and interested people who came, and you put in a lot of effort. You put in a lot of effort looking after those devotees, distributing that prasadam, these flyers, and making sure everybody's happily received. So that is a great achievement. Now when you know Srila Prabhupada will come here to Melbourne, in 2 weeks' time, everybody would be up and about, jumping frisky, trying to arrange all different types of engagements and programs, right? It's like now we had this, also the World Parliament of Religion. It was also another big success, because Krishna consciousness was nicely represented there. So, but when you go out on preaching, when you go out on distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, you are making appointments for Srila Prabhupada to speak to so many people. In a very private setting, in a very informal setting, in a very confidential setting. Because you know they have the saying that a book is your best friend. You know, like they say the dog is man's best friend. But little do they know that when the dog licks you, the dog is thinking, oh, this tastes very nice. I want to eat this person, you know. But anyhow, a book is actually your best friend. So if the people have Bhagavad Gita at home and they're in difficulty, their life is in trouble, and it does happen, even here in Victoria, the most prosperous and most sophisticated city in Australia, people are looking for what is that real thing, for happiness, for peace. I met a person yesterday from France. I asked him, why are you here? I said, I just had to get away from things, you know. I just need something completely different, something completely new. So I said, okay, there you go, my friend. Boom, you're qualified. Huh? I asked the people, are you a rock star or a regular loser? And either way, whatever they say, it's all good. You know, the answer is the same. You're qualified. Boom, there you go. Huh? When they say I'm a rock star, then you say, oh, you're very humble. I like that. When they say, oh, I'm a regular loser, you say, oh, okay, fine, fair enough. Take this. It can't get any worse. It can only get better. Huh? So, the point is, when we trying to give people Krishna consciousness, we cannot be on the false ego. We cannot identify with our body and with all our own social ins and outs, our own, what do you call them? Incongruities, our own little personal ways of doing things. They asked Prabhupada, why didn't you come earlier to New York? Why did you stay 5 months in that deadbeat town, Butler, Pennsylvania? Prabhupada said, never think I wasted my time there. Also not in India. I was preparing, you know. I had a big mission. I had to write these books. I had to get everything prepared. Then asked, what did you do for 5 months in Butler, Pennsylvania? Prabhupada said, I was studying the American people. I was observing and studying and preparing. And one time he wrote back to his friend in India that tonight I'm going to see an Indian dance performance. Now I am 7 years old and I have not seen Indian dance in 40 years. And I'm a sannyasi and I got no interest in seeing this woman dance. But I want to see two things. How do the American people receive our Indian culture? And number two, what are the social customs? How do they invite people? How do they interact? How do they treat people? How do they, you know, what are the exchanges? Why? Because I want to do the same thing for preaching. He wrote to his godbrothers when he was in New York, living in the house of a crazy drug addict hippie who wanted to kill him with a knife because he thought Prabhupada stole his bar of soap when he was under the influence of LSD. He ran after Prabhupada with a knife. Prabhupada had to leave that place and leave everything behind. But he wrote to his godbrothers in India, now for the first time in history, we have a temple of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in the West. We have a temple. Send men, send money. Huh? Come here and preach. You can be the acharya. I will help you. And nobody came. And very few helped. So Srila Prabhupada was very enthusiastic. He was very eager. Nowadays when we say, oh Prabhu, today we have a preaching program. Oh, what's the venue? What's the attendance? What's the menu? How long will it last? What type of transportation is there? You know? Have you heard these questions before? Have you asked yourself these questions before? I remember the first preaching program we had in 1984. I haven't even joined the movement, but I was already following. And they had one program in a suburb of Zurich, which was very much known as a project. There was only big, huge, concrete bunkers, you know, like really ghetto type. And it's not like the project in America, but it was a very, very low income area. Just straight between the highway and the railroads, and a few shopping centers were there, and it was kind of pretty desperate and down and out part of town. And the devotees had arranged a preaching program. And I'd never been to a preaching program. And I was very excited to go to that preaching program. And we went, and the devotee was supposed to organize it. He didn't turn up. And it was in the cellar of a, you know, they have these places where the youth can meet and do their youth activities. So it was underground. The place was not very nice, you know, it was really broken and beat up, you know. You have these sofas which people put out on the road, and these rugs which people put out on the road, and nobody picks them up for a few weeks, you know. These type of furnitures were there. And we were about two or three bhaktas from the temple, and an American devotee who was the temple president at that time, and he drove the van. So I thought, wow, this looks pretty interesting. I mean, I never really been to this part of town, and this building looks really kind of interesting. And nobody showed up. Not a single person. Not even the person who was supposed to organize it. Nobody was there. Huh? So we just said Hare Krishna and took prasadam very enthusiastically and drove back to the temple. But I thought it was a fun outing. Huh? It was an experience. So the point is, what does it take to get you discouraged?
Maya knows exactly what are your weak spots. And what does it take to make you discouraged? And she's trying to put those obstacles in front of you. Now, sometimes after performing devotional service for a few years or for a few decades, you feel like you're stuck in this one-way street and there is this big high-rise of concrete in front of you. And there is no windows and no doors. And you can't go anywhere. Any side you're turning your head, there is a wall there. And there is no way how to make advancement. Then what do we have to do? We can beat our head against the wall. We can try to kick the wall. But it doesn't work. We have to turn inwards in our heart and surrender to Krishna in our heart and say, okay, Krishna, this is how far I could make it on my own strength. From now on, it's your way. It's not my way anymore. It's your way. I can't go any further. I'm out of my depth. I'm out of energy. I don't have a clue anymore where this is going to go, where it's going to take me. Please, my Lord, if it's your desire, make me dance. Make me dance. Like Srila Prabhupada on the board of the Jaladuta, he wrote that prayer. So, we're all coming to that point in our lives where we have to turn towards Krishna and accept His guidance. And all of a sudden, somewhere, a small door opens. But usually the door is so small that you can only get through on your stomach, on your belly, crawling. Or you think, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to bow down to anybody. Like people come to the temple and they say, what is all this bowing down business? I don't bow down to anybody. Hey, I have got my permanent residency. I'm an Aussie now. I don't bow down to anybody. Everybody is equal, right? Everybody is a mate. We have this big, you know, bhav of mateness here. So I'm not bowing to anybody. But then you see them putting on suits and ties and dresses and looking awfully funny, awfully funny, just to do their job. Oh, that's just a job. Yeah, but you're bowing down, you know, 500 times a day. You're bowing down to all your customers. You're bowing down to your boss. You're bowing down to your family members. Oh, that's for sense gratification. Yeah, but how much sense gratification is it, bowing down 500 times? Yeah, punish me some more, you know. Yeah, turn the other cheek. Yes, beat me more. That's not very much fun. So everybody's bowing down, but in front of Krishna, oh no, not going to bow down. Even you see people sometimes coming to the temple. And I don't care from what tradition, from what cultural background they are. But sometimes they're like, oh, hi boss. Hi, boss. How's it going, boss? But you know what that means when you arrive on that island and the locals, they come up to you and they say, hey, boss, you know what it means? It means, how can I take your money, you know? Right? Right? That's what it means. Hey, boss, great you came. Okay. You need a taxi? You need a hotel? You need something to have figured out, you know? Give me your money. That's what it means. So when we go to Krishna and we say, hey boss, that means give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. But that should not be our mentality. Our mentality should be, Krishna has already given me everything. Why should I ask Him? He's already supplied. Why should we go on nagging if Krishna has already given us everything we need? Krishna is only hankering for our love. He's only hankering for our affection. That's like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was so much indebted to his devotees. He was so much endeared to his devotees. Like Srivas Thakur, he had a big family, but he didn't have any job. And the only thing which was happening in his household was Harinam Sankirtan. But there was a lot of family members, and it was employees and servants. So he asked Srivas, how do you maintain your family? And Srivas went like this. And he clapped his hand 3 times. And Lord Chaitanya said, what does that mean? He says, if 3 meals go by and I have to fast, then I will jump into the Ganges and tie a big rope and a rock around my neck and I will drown myself. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he commanded that you are so surrendered, you're so sincere that you have bought me with your affection and sincerity and dedication. And you're such an unalloyed devotee that rather would Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, go door to door with a begging bowl than that you would have any want or need. So Mahaprabhu was very much endeared by the surrender and by the humility of his devotees. When Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis went to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they paid prostrated obeisances outside. And with straw in the street, with folded palms, they surrendered to the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had them brought in. And they were great ministers. They were the right-hand man of the emperor at that time. But they felt themselves as the most humble, as the most fallen, as the most insignificant personalities. And that's why Mahaprabhu empowered them to establish the Vaishnav Siddhanta by writing these literatures and by establishing these temples. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada, even though highly qualified, from a very highly elevated background, he always saw himself as the humble servant of his Guru Maharaj. He said that it is 30 years now that my spiritual master has left this planet, but there was never a moment where I felt that he was not present in my life. So our spiritual masters are still here, but we may think, oh, he's in a different town, or he's doing something different, or he has, you know, different occupations. Oh, he has so many disciples now. He can't really take care of everybody. How many disciples did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur have? 60,000. Srila Prabhupada was not a prominent personality in the Gaudiya Math. He was not one of the leading sannyasis. He was a householder, running his own business and helping some of the preaching. But he had the feeling that his Guru Maharaj was never absent from him. From the first meeting which he had in Ultadanga Junction till he took initiation was 11 years. And he never felt separated from his Guru Maharaj. And how do we feel? Our Guru Maharaj, you know, steps outside of the temple room or he's on his way to the airport. Oh, okay, he's gone. Now I can do any damn thing I like till the next time he shows up. Guru and Super Soul are there in the heart of the disciple. Guru always knows what we're up to. There is no privacy. If you really want privacy, then Guru is not the person to have privacy with. Because he can see right through us. He sees our heart, he sees our mind, he sees our desires. He sees our conditionings. And Srila Prabhupada, he said that I got a lot of mercy from my spiritual master because I never had ulterior motive. I was only interested in listening to his instructions and to carry out his orders. That was my only interest. And that was noted by his spiritual master. He hears very nicely, so he will speak very nicely. So if we want to achieve the mystic yogic perfections, then we should focus on hearing Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound vibration. Because this sound is very powerful. It is very life-changing. If we hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita on a daily basis, our lives will change. You don't have to believe me. You can make the laboratory experiment. Start reading an hour, or even better, 2 hours a day of Prabhupada's books. And you see what it does to your life. How much energy, how much clarity, how much inspiration you will gain. How many of you had had a problem and you just open a book, anywhere, and you read the purport, and Srila Prabhupada is exactly addressing your issue, your point. Right on the point, exactly what you needed to hear. It is amazing. We should actually read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. Sanskrit and English. If possible with purports. But if not, then just Sanskrit and English. It takes anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes. It's not a big endeavor. But it makes a huge difference in life. You know, in a month's time, you will actually go through the Gita almost twice. And after a few months, the whole thing starts to make sense, you know. How Krishna, what Krishna is talking about here. And how he's presenting it in a very systematic way. So Srila Prabhupada said that this movement will go on by simply following, chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, and by using our intelligence and organizational skills to push forward Krishna consciousness. So the people are out there, they're waiting for Krishna consciousness. But we're dragging our feet because we're stuck in comfort zone. We're very much comfortable. We're very happy that we got it figured out. The fridge is full. Prasadam's on time. It's not too hot, not too cold, always pleasant. But where is that anxiety, that burning anxiety in our heart? Where is that burning desire for preaching? That we have to ask ourselves. And if we do not have that burning desire, then we should associate with Srila Prabhupada in his books and in his teachings and with his devotees. Then we'll get that desire. Because there is not a country or a city as favorable to Krishna consciousness as Melbourne. And I've been around the block a few times. And I can tell you for sure, we went out yesterday and we're just having a walk in a park. I mean, your park is called Swanson Street, but it's like a park, you know. There's a lot of trees and pedestrian area, and it's even covered, you know. And even if it rains outside, there's always a little bit of sunshine with the rain. Very pleasant. Police force comes by, you know, greets you. Oh, Hare Krishna, have a great day. You even have a personal musician. You even have a band playing for you when you go out distributing books. You only get that in Melbourne, right? And he's a nice fellow. He took a book off me last time I was there. He really likes us. Just stay away from the guy with the big issue, because he's got a big issue, you know, about the Harrys. So, but otherwise, there is not a place as ripe for preaching Krishna consciousness as this place. And still we're thinking, oh, another day. Oh, you know, I have so much to do. I can't figure out how I'm gonna, you know, last till the next Mayapur festival. And then soon I have to go to India, and it's gonna be so much austerity and this and that. When you go to Russia, you know, things are cold there now. You know, cold doesn't mean like 7 or 8 or 15 degrees, but it's like minus 30. You know? Right now, as we're speaking, even in Switzerland, it's minus 7 or 8. You can still live with that. You know, it's cold, but you can still tolerate it. But minus 30 means that the wind goes through your jacket, through your clothes, through your skin, through your flesh, and it goes to your bone like needles, you know? Like that. That's minus 30. When you spit, it turns into ice before it hits the ground. That's cold, you know. Your face becomes like a mask, you know. Like when you put wax on your face, you know, or something, and it becomes hard, your face starts to feel like that from the cold. Huh? That's cold. Huh? So you're in a very, very fortunate situation here. You got all the books in the world readily available. Huh? Many countries, they don't have books. Even they want to distribute books, they don't have books. Because they're just not translated yet. Or they're not printed. Or people just don't have any money. Can you imagine that? You go up to somebody and they really want what you got, but they don't have a cent. They may give you post stamps, you know? Or they may give you bus tickets. Or they may trade you with whatever they grow in their vegetable garden. You may think this is a joke, but this is happening in some countries. I was in Brazil, they just changed from the old currency to the new currency, and it was an inflation of about 100% every day over the course of a few weeks. That was 10 years ago, and they had the new real introduced. Nobody had money. Everybody kept it in the bank, in a dollar account. So if you have to convince the person to walk with you to the bank and to take money out. Now you know what it means to convince somebody to go to the ATM to take money out. I mean, I do it because I'm a bit bold. I do it about 3 or 5 times a day. But for most of, you know, regular distributors, it's not such an easy thing. Walk him to the bank, you know? It's like, okay, this is a hold up, you know? Tell me your PIN number. Hand over your card. Doesn't work like that, right? There's a mental barrier there. There's a block there. Or in other places, people say, this is not my religion. I'm from a different religion. I'm from a different background. But here, I just tell people, hey man, look around you. I mean, look around you. You got the whole world here. I mean, get a grip. You got to handle this. There is one God and there is one people. Have you figured it out? And then they go like, actually, yeah, you're right. You know? Okay. And we're the good guys. What means good guys? We're the Hare Krishnas. We're the people doing the dancing and the chanting. And then one lady in Sydney, then she said, but I haven't seen you chant and dance. You know, like sometimes they want to find some fault. And I say, yeah, no, in Brisbane. First off, this time. And I said, yeah, you know, first we do the books, then we do the chanting. So she said, oh, all right, okay, but I want to see you guys chant and dance. And then after the book distribution, we did the Harinam. And sure enough, she was waiting for her bus. And she saw us chanting and dancing. And she was, oh, really? You know, they're doing it. They're really doing it. It's really happening. Huh? The people want to see Hare Krishna stands for quality. It stands for that this is really good. It stands for outstanding. Srila Prabhupada was not mediocre. He was not satisfied with having small things. So that means we have a legacy, a tradition to uphold. We have a name, a reputation to uphold. So whatever we do, whether it be cleaning or cooking or serving or preaching or dressing the deities or distributing books, we should always remember that for the person who sees this floor, who sees the deities, who gets this book, this will be representative of Srila Prabhupada. They equate you with the Krishna Consciousness Movement and Prabhupada. You are the ambassador of ISKCON. That gives great responsibility. That means we have to be respectable and know how to deal with people in a respectable way. And that means we got to get up in the morning and chant our rounds and, you know, get out of our own little grumpy shells and live on the positive side of the planet. Because people want to experience what is the Krishna consciousness nectar. So, and then, by doing that service and by meditating on the instructions of the spiritual master, which are none different from the lotus feet of Krishna all the yogic perfections will be granted as a side product. And the funny thing is, you don't even care about them. You don't even get, you know, enamored or enticed by them. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Any question? Yes.
Thank you very much, Pastor Paul, for the wonderful lecture. When you were saying about burning desire, Prabhupada had to wait 5 hours to see Mrs. Munarji Desai when he was asking for a passage in the car with him.
Yeah.
So that was the only desire he had to serve the spiritual master, his instructions, and then follow those instructions.
For many days he went to that office. And you know, it's not
many times.
In India, when you have an old Swami waiting in front of your office, it's not a good PR, you know. It doesn't make, you know, it doesn't look good. But Prabhupada was ready to go through that. And how do we feel sometimes, you know, prasadam's late, 2.5 minutes, and we're like, what's wrong with these people, you know? Huh?
So what I was saying is that Srila Prabhupada opened his window for us to go into the spiritual world.
Yes.
By just chanting 16 rounds and 4 devotees. It's an incredible.
Yes.
Greatest opportunity.
Yes. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.